Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Naps are important for toddlers. It's an opportunity to reboot, recharge for the rest of the day. But as your child grows older, they may become less and less interested in taking these little breaks. So what does your child actually need? And how can you help them catch those extra Z's? I'm Jen Varela, gentle sleep coach and owner of Sugar Night Night. This is Parent Savers.
Faster than a speeding toddler.
Sit still for just a minute.
Can soothe boo-boos with a gentle kiss.
Would you get down from there?
Able to clean poopy bottoms in a single swipe.
Oh, what did you eat?
Turning frazzled mommies and daddies into procreators of peace and harmony.
Ah, quit touching me.
It's Parent Savers, empowering new parents everywhere.
Welcome to Parent Savers, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Parent Savers is your online, on-the-go support group for parents with infants and toddlers. I'm your guest host, Sunny Galt. Thanks to all of our loyal listeners who join us every time we release a new Parent Savers episode. And for those of you who like to participate in our conversations on Facebook and Twitter, we appreciate that. If you want to get even more great Parent Savers content, be sure to join our special Parent Savers Club. There's more information about that on our website. And you can also check out our Parent Savers app that you can listen to all the episodes wherever you're at, whenever you're on the go. So Kalina, our producer, is going to tell you more about our virtual panelist program.
All right. So virtual panelists, if you cannot join us here in studio, but you want to be part of the conversation, maybe get some more information, you can post, like Sunny was saying, Twitter, Facebook, use the hashtag ParentSaversVP, and we will do our best to make sure you get included.
Okay, so let's meet everyone here in the studio. You guys know me, I'm Sunny, and I own New Mommy Media, which produces Parent Savers, Preggy Pals, The Boob Group, and Twin Talks. I have four kids of my own, two boys, ages 4 and 2, and two girls, they're identical twins, that are almost a year old. Scott.
Hi, I'm Scott. I have a four-year-old boy. I'm always happy to be on the show. I'm particularly interested in this topic because I have Alex is very disinterested in taking naps at home, but he's very interested in taking them at school.
And Kalina, what about you?
I have one son. He's 17 months old, and we're currently going through a little bit of a nap strike. We're definitely not done because I can tell he needs them. Yeah. But he will take them very sporadically now, and he used to be very good. We had a morning nap routine, and he was kind of petering out on the afternoon nap before I went to work, but you know, he was still pretty consistent, and now he will go 3 or 4 days no nap, up all day, want to be a part of the action, and by the time it is bedtime at night, it is just meltdown mode. So
you know, I have that too going on in my house. Man. Yeah, I have. So my 4-year-old is pretty much done with naps. I'm actually hoping to use this episode as a way to clarify: are we really done with naps? We're gonna talk about apps in just a second. With naps, and so my 2-year-old though is still a big time napper, and I'm very appreciative of that. And my 1-year-olds, of course, are napping as well. So, before we get started today, we are going to talk about an app that we took a look at. We like to review apps that we think will be helpful for new parents out there. And this one is called Chore Monster. It is a free app. It's available on the iPad and the iPhone. And if you look at the reviews and some of the information that's posted on it, it does say it's for ages 3 and up. I would say, though, that is if you have a more advanced 3-year-old. This is kind of on the upper age of that demographic. Any child that kind of understands the chore system or a reward system would probably get something out of this. So the idea is that your kids are going to earn points based on completing chores. It's called Chore Monster because there is a monster carnival. They have over 250 monsters that they can earn, and you're trying to collect monsters. The bigger goal, of course, for us parents is for them to collect points, and then those points are assigned different rewards. So what I like about this, the interface space is fun. You know, it's got some really great, funny looking monsters, which I don't know if your kids like monsters. Mine do. You can select whatever chore you want. They do have some that are put in here, like a kind of templated, like, you know, take out the trash or feed the dog or brush your teeth. Some basic ones. You can enter whichever ones you'd want. You can choose the reward. You can keep track of a bunch of different things on this. So it's primarily, it's an app, but you can also log in on the website. So I noticed right when I signed up for the app, it sent me an email and allowed me to go on the website. It verifies your email address, stuff like that. So if you'd rather do more of this online, you can certainly do that. As a parent, if your child completes a chore, it notifies you via email, and you can even brag about it. There's a section where you can brag about your child completing a chore, and you just click a button, it goes to Facebook or Twitter. So I don't know. I mean, if that's important to you, that is an option. So we were talking a little bit earlier before the show started about how this might be a nice honey-do list for your significant other. So if you'd rather assign chores to your spouse or your partner, do so at your own risk. So what do you guys think about this? Is this something you think you might use? Since, of course, it is a free app. What do you think, Kalina?
We're not really at that phase yet, but I can see where it would be kind of good when you get really, really busy and you just need something to keep track of what's going on, especially when you have multiple children. I think that could be very helpful. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like it gives some good incentive to kids. So if that's something that they're into, then I could see it definitely working out.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, so I have two comments about this app. The first is that I think it could be a very useful tool for developing a rhythm and routine of a day, which I think is really important for younger, you know, for early childhood. So I think that where that's difficult in certain families to do, I think this app could provide some direction to help with that. What I don't like about the app is the point system, because I think that the achievement of doing a chore could desensitize somebody to actually doing the child to doing the chore. So if there is no reward, then there's no reason to do it. But the dog still has to be fed, whether or not they're going to get a brownie at the end of the day.
That's true. And maybe that's why they have both options, where you're collecting monsters and you can also assign points. So, I mean, it might be different if they're just collecting virtual monsters as opposed to you get to go to whatever place, or, you know what I mean? You get some sort of special treat or something at the end.
But the points could be really good if it's for your spouse.
Those would be like brownie points.
Just gonna say that.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's like, you know, okay, so if I do the dishes, then I get to, you know, earn enough points to sleep in the same bed. In the
evening. You're not in the doghouse, right?
Yeah. Not on the couch.
Yeah, so, yeah, just the little things.
If you go to bed on time,
yes.
See,
there you go.
Turn it into nap time and stuff like that, right? Okay, so again, this is called Chore Monster. It's a free app available on iPad and iPhone, and it sounds like if you've got children in the right age bracket, that this would be a thumbs up. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Okay. As new parents, we all love naps. Sometimes we love them even more than our children love them. And that's what we're talking about today. Jen Varela is one of our featured experts on the show. She's a gentle sleep coach and owner of Sugar Night Night. Welcome back to Parent Savers, Jen.
Thank you. It's my privilege and pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So let's talk about naps. Let's define it first. What is a nap?
Yeah. So I have to make a joke first, which is if it's spelled with an S, it's a four-letter word, right?
Right.
So, and in some families, it is, right? Yes. Naps are really, can be a great thing in a household, but they can also be a real challenge. To define a nap, I would say, if I was to snapshot it, that it needs to be an hour and a half to be considered a restorative nap. Otherwise, it's something shorter than that is probably enough to take the edge off, but it's not meeting a physical or mental nourishment. So that's in general, right? But depending on age, I mean, we could go on and on and on. I mean, as far as, you know, at what age is an hour and a half enough, right?
Right.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So how would you want to break that up? Do you want to know like a certain ages?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about ages. I mean, we're defining this as toddlers, and I guess toddlers can mean different ages to different people. But for... what would you say toddlers? What age?
Well, let's just say if we were to pick 18 months, okay. Maybe that's a safe spot to kind of push off of. They might still be taking two naps a day, probably transitioning to one nap a day. And they could still be getting somewhere between two and three combined total of nap in the day. So if they were on a two nap schedule, it might be an hour nap, which is on the edge, right? Restorative in the morning, and then a 2 hour nap in the afternoon. If they're on a one nap schedule, then they could be taking like a 2.5 hour nap in the afternoon. So as you go up in age, so at like 2 years of age, you're probably somewhere around an hour and a half up to 3 hours is the range on a nap. And then at three, the average is about an hour and a half. And at four is where we may see that the nap is no longer happening.
Yes, you just hit the nail on the head in my house. My four-year-old is like, what, nap? Why would I do that? So we kind of talked about this at the beginning, but let's kind of go through, and for Scott and Kalina, how do your kids feel about naps right now? Scott, I know you have an older child, so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Alex is four, and, you know, for us, when he's at school, everybody takes a nap, and he's right there taking a nap, and it's somewhere, you know, around the two-hour mark, and that's every day, Monday through Friday. When he's at home, so on the weekends when there's no school, it's like kryptonite. You know? So he doesn't want to do it, and we suspect it's just because he doesn't want to miss any action.
Yeah.
You know? So if we both, you know, if we all got in bed and we all took a nap, and of course he would also fall asleep. So it's not that, you know, he's opposed to sleeping; he's just opposed to not being a part of everything. So. That's kind of where we are.
That's a good way to test it, if you all get in bed and see then if your child knows, okay, everyone I care about is in this room, so I'm not missing anything. Is that a good way to test it?
Yeah, the other dynamic is so interesting to me as far as how there's this lovely peer pressure that happens in preschool. And I get it all the time with my parents that I work with that, like, yeah, at daycare or preschool, they nap great, but they won't do it for me at home. And I think it's two parts. I do think one is I look at the parents as it's kind of like you are their park, right? They want to be with you and they're excited to be with you. And so they can push through their sleep needs in order to stay in the action, as you said. So I think it's important to take a look at, and we can maybe go over some of these kind of questions a little later. I think there was one that was how do you determine if they still need a nap, right? But I guess what I would say is maybe it's not so bad if 5 days a week he gets a nap and on the weekend he isn't. If he's four, that might be enough for him. It might be that it's not a problem. However, if your child's cranky and fussy and upset and not sleeping well at night, well, then I'm going to say, yeah, you're going to have to figure out a way.
Well, it's interesting because I think that in most cases it's fine. Now, now it's fine. Mm-hmm. But there are still regular times where I could look at his eyes and they're bloodshot and he's lackluster, but he just wants to keep fighting. He wants to be up. He doesn't want to go to sleep. And you know that he'd feel so much better if he just lay down for a little while.
Right.
He doesn't want to miss it. He's also putting his needs aside to meet another need, which may not be as important in the grand scheme of things.
Right. So we can talk as we go, some strategies on that. But maybe laying down with them is not a bad idea. At least get them going, right? So
when your child is born, how do you know? I mean, are there some kids that are just two or even three naps a day kids versus kids that, because I feel like with my older boys, so I have 4-year-old and 2-year-old, they never took two naps a day. My twins have to have two naps a day. And I don't know, I just knew because they were fussy and with my twins. And I'm like, oh, I've never had a child that really needed, that showed signs of physically needing two naps a day. Whether or not that's what they really needed or not, I guess I was just waiting for the signs that they needed more sleep. Mm-hmm. So how do we know what our child needs? Are there some kids that really only need one nap a day, even from the get-go?
Mm-hmm. You know? So how do we know? Well, first, one of the things that's fascinating to me about sleep is how the brain organizes sleep. So as they get older, their ability to go from nap to bedtime stretches and stretches. So if we start at the beginning, like maybe it was an hour. Then at 3 months, it's about 2 hours. At 6 months, it's about 3 hours. At 1 year, it's about 4 hours, right, before cortisol kicks in. So one of the things that happens is, like, when you have a two-nap schedule going to a one-nap schedule, how do you know, and why is it important? And one of the ways that you know if your child is ready to switch, and I'm going to say ideally, I would like to see it around 15 months, not at 12 months. There's a lot of families that have little ones that start pushing through, and they think, oh, I guess we're on a one-nap schedule. Well, maybe from sleep on a 24-hour, okay, but that distance between last nap and bedtime might not be on a one-nap schedule. So you might have a kid who's getting enough sleep in a 24-hour, but that distance between last nap and bedtime is still not where it needs to be. So that's why I like to keep a two-nap schedule as long as you can, because that allows you to place it in the right part of the day. But how would you know it's time to transition? One is if they're sleeping 10 to 11 hours at night and it's uninterrupted and it's good sleep, and it's taking them longer to fall asleep for that first nap in the morning, or they're consistently taking a shorter nap in the morning, or they sleep so much in the morning that they nap strike you in the afternoon. And if those things are happening for like 14 days straight, then you can kind of go, all right, it's time. It's time to make the transition, right? So, but what you need to know is that naps correspond with our energy dips. Elizabeth Pantley talks about this, where basically the naps enable the body to release cortisol and hormones like adrenaline that combat stress and tension. So it's really important for toddlers to be getting a nap, because it helps with their increase their learning capacity. So one of the things that a nap does is it's like a midday pause that they can take all that information, log it, so now their brain's ready for new information. It can actually fill in the gaps for poor nighttime sleep, which is interesting. So you can kind of make up for bad nights with naps. And I'm not going to tell you anything any other parent doesn't know already, which is hello behavior, right? Yeah. Fussiness, right? When they're getting good naps, then they're less fussy and whining. And of course, it helps with bedtime routine too, right? Because they're not overtired when it's time to go to bed. So,
Kalina, did you start Adam off with two naps? How did that work?
Yeah, he kind of started himself off that way, I think. It was not even something, I mean, and especially in the beginning, I think it's all such a fog. You're just like, he's tired, I'm just putting him to sleep, and maybe right. I can get some sleep. But, and so we just kind of fell into that routine, but our schedule's a little bit interesting because I work in a later shift. I work my other job 3 to midnight, mm-hmm. so I'm not there for second nap. Usually, if he's doing it later, I leave around 2 from the house, so he's either right about to hit it or hasn't yet, and then I'm not there for bedtime. So he's with his grandma usually right when I leave from work or for work, so she kind of is in the role of afternoon nap, and then my husband does bedtime. So it's been a weird dynamic figuring out our schedule between, okay, did he sleep for you? No, is he going to sleep for you? I don't know. Let's see what happens. But yeah, he definitely started out with the two, he's pretty much cut out morning naps with me. So I think we're at that point where we're switching, because he has no interest.
Yeah, we started off with as many naps as was necessary for him. We try to put him down as much as possible. He was good about telling us when he needed to nap. And I think, you know, he was on the longer end of the two nap the two nap schedule, and then there was just like a switch that flipped, and then it's just kind of, you know, he made some decisions, you know, to not maybe nap as much as, you know, we'd like him to.
How important is it to stay on a schedule, Jen, as far as the specific time of day? I know we talked about the amount of time, you know, between your last nap and bedtime, but how important is it, you know, for, you know, toddlers to always nap at 1 o'clock and this time? You know what I mean?
Right, right. Why is, because it's really inconvenient sometimes too, right? Right? Yeah. I mean, let's just, that's where the four letter yes. naps comes in, right?
Because yeah.
it is, and I like to look at a schedule from the standpoint of you have a track to run on, so you have a baseline. So if you break the schedule, you know how to get back on the schedule, right? So I try to look at it more from a standpoint of it's something to help you, not to, you know, but okay, so how does it affect the little ones? I mean, I think that's really the bottom line, right, is we want what's best for them. And so it's interesting because naps really build a reservoir so they can get a fresh start. So if you think about it, the night sleep gives you a fresh start, and then that kind of wears off,
yeah.
right? And so they help relieve that sleep pressure, meaning I like how Elizabeth Pantley calls it the volcano effect, that if you don't get enough restorative rest, then the stress builds and builds and builds until the little ones, right, lose it, right? And so it's called a homeostatic sleep drive, that basically that your body builds that sleep pressure, and little ones, they can lose their ability to have concentration, so they can't take on any new information. And they're not able to stop that explosion, right? So they just get more and more inconsolable. So I think it's really significant to know that naps can make up for night sleep, but night sleep cannot make up for naps.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So so you can't go, oh, okay, well, as long as he's supposed to get 12 hours in a 24-hour, if he gets it all at night, then he doesn't need nap. Okay. Well, okay, but are they fussy, irritable, unhappy, less flexible? You might have a little one that knows how to push through his need, but that's not really what he needs, right? I think it's really funny that the dictionary actually has a definition for what we call the bewitching or fussy hour, right?
Right.
It's called the arsenic hour. And it says, the time of day when children and parents have come home, but dinner has not yet been served, seen as being difficult due to everyone being tired and hungry. And I just think that's funny that it's actually in the dictionary, right? So I think, you know when it's working or not working for your child. But basically how you need to know is that there is a sleep pressure, that the nap helps relieve that. And so it's important also to make sure that, and we'll talk a little more about this, but that the nap is not too late in the day, mm-hmm. because then there's not enough sleep pressure when it comes time for bedtime.
And then you have kids that just don't want to go to sleep.
Exactly. Right. And so I think it is important where it's placed. And there's different thresholds for different children. Right. So you can't always go exactly, oh, the book says this. You've got to be paying attention to what's working for your child.
Jen, I wanted to ask you a quick question, kind of expand on what Sunny just asked. But would kids, do they respond better to the predictability of being able to, you know, if they are used to napping at 1 and 4 or something like that, is that better than just having these rant, well, I'm going to get 2 in, it could be whatever? I mean, do they respond?
Yeah, I mean, I think structure is ideal, right, for little ones, because they know what to expect and they can make that transition. I think if you have a daycare or preschool situation, it's ideal to keep your schedule the same as what the structure is there, which is sometimes also inconvenient. But and I think too, you know, maybe even having a bit of a shortened routine with nap, which just allows them to let their subconscious make that shift. So I would say yes. I think the structure and routine and placement, it's all benefits you in the end, right? So.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to learn more about the ideal environment for taking a nap, and we'll also get some more great tips from Jen Varela. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Today, we're talking about the do's and don'ts when it comes to your toddler
and your toddler's naps. So let's start by talking about nap environment. I know when I'm sleeping, I like certain things done or, you know, dimly lit if possible. And, you know, I know my children have blankets and stuff that they like to have with them. So what is the ideal environment? Like we were talking about earlier, it's not always going to be ideal. But if we could make it ideal, what are we aiming for? And is that subjective? Is that dependent on the child, you know?
Right. So I think there's, you know, some bullet points I can just go bam, bam, bam through.
Sure.
So, you know, it's in a dimly lit room that you just said. Yes, that would be ideal. However, if you have a child who's mixing up day and night, then you probably need to keep more light in the room for nap in order to get them on that circadian rhythm. So it doesn't necessarily need to be blackout situation because the brain, you want the brain to still know it's daytime. So that's kind of interesting. White noise, you might often have it louder during the day than you need to at night because of a phone ringing or other high-pitched noises that are happening. Room temperature should be between 68 and 72 degrees. You know, it's an interesting thing, but not all mattresses are the same. And so you really need to make sure that yours is meeting all the safety guidelines. And I would recommend that you make sure that there's not any recalls, especially if you've bought something secondhand. And some mattresses have flip sides. So if you have younger ones that you've used a toddler mattress, you know, crib that's going to the next one, you know, there might be an infant side and a toddler side. So take a look at that. You want to eliminate any suffocation hazards, right, that could be involved. And then for older children, toddlers, I think you really need to make sure that all your heavy furniture is secured to the wall. Because if they get up from their nap and they're like, oh, I think I'll climb up this dresser, all of a sudden what happens, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's important. Motion naps, and ideally, sure, stationary naps are better. They're more restorative. However, a motion nap is better than no nap, right?
So like being in the car kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm talking car, stroller, baby wearing,
okay.
Right? And one of the things to keep in mind about the car, there's just been car seat. There's been things that have come up recently, right, about these little ones that have had their head bent forward, and so their airway is restricted. And that's a real issue. So car seats are my – I used to be like, oh, it's all good. Car seat, bring it in-house. I kind of changed my status on that or my opinion on that. You know, can you keep your child from not falling asleep in the car? Probably not. But it wouldn't be the place that I would recommend that you bring that car seat in and just let them still continue to sleep in that.
Right.
And with that, you know, if there's little ones, I guess swing, keep that in mind too. You know, it's kind of the same concept. And then one other thing I think is really cool, and Dr. Sears talks about it in the book, The Baby Sleep Book, that sometimes you can entice a toddler to take a nap if you'll make a nest. So if you'll, like, make a cozy little spot behind the couch, or you have a cardboard box that you've cut out and they can make their little nest in there. Sometimes little ones just feel kind of lonely in a big bed on their own, and being in a little nest, you can make it this special thing and they might be enticed to take a nap. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that because we found that barricading him in with, you know, Andrea had this, this kind of like horseshoe shaped pillow that she used when she,
pillow.
The pregnancy pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Breast
so we kind of like put him in there and tuck him in and all that. And that's making him
feel more secure, right?
Well, in a smaller area. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I'll come and pick him up from school, I'll see him, if he's still napping, he'll be inside of a,
right?
With like, you know, some silk or something draped over the top. It seems to work really, really well.
Yeah.
So
you're, maybe
you're
a
you're
nest.
An advocate of that.
Yeah. So okay. I think that's really cool for toddlers because you don't worry so much about their safety as much. So I think it's really, and it's worked for some of my clients, which has been neat.
Galena, what do you do to help Adam sleep?
Right now?
Pray really
hard. Yeah, because even now, I mean, because he still breastfeeds, and that used to be my fallback. Like, we had a little routine where, for his morning naps anyways, he would sleep in pretty good for me. And so we'd get up and we'd have breakfast. So we'd do or play a little bit usually and then have breakfast. And then he'd usually be really messy after breakfast. So then we'd, you know, give him a little shower, wash off, and then he'd nurse and fall asleep. And that was his morning nap. He doesn't nurse and fall asleep in the morning, though, now. He nurses and he looks at me and says, yay, it's time to play, and off he goes. I'm like, that was my, like, guarantee. Like, yeah. If I nursed him, at least I knew he would drift off to sleep, and that's not working now either. So I don't have any good advice because I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, no, that fits in with my next question. So, Jen, what do we do about reluctant nappers?
Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's amazing how they can will themselves not to sleep as toddlers, right? They're so powerful, and they realize, oh, I'm so powerful, I can do this, right? So, obviously, exercise is a great thing. I call it running the ponies, right? Just like for adults, you got to wear them out, you know, and then they're going to sleep better. So fresh air, outdoor play, socializing, you know, if they have a busy morning, then they're going to be more apt to give you a good nap in the afternoon. However, you have to watch out that you don't overstimulate them, right? And then now you're like, ooh, we missed it, right? We missed the window of when
they got their second wind.
Yes. So a couple things to keep in mind is that screen time, you know, the backlit lights, they kind of block the melatonin kicking in. So screens would be good to have off at least an hour before you were going to take a nap so as to let melatonin kick in. And make sure you're not giving the nap too late, right, because you've missed that first sleep window. And then, you know, maybe you need to transition with them, right? So you have a little bit of a routine where you guys, there's a lot to be said about progressive muscle relaxation or guided imagery. Basically, what that is I would, like with my son, I have a story, and I tell the same story every time, and we start at his toes, and we talk about his toes and how his toes feel heavy and like little rocks, and now his feet have become statues, and he can feel the sunshine coming up his legs, and his body feels all warm. Like, you can talk them through being aware of relaxing their body, right? And if you do the same story every time, it's like they know what's coming and they know how to do that. So I recommend that you look for a way to make that a positive connecting time, but a downshift, right? So it's just like if you had them at the park and you didn't give them the 10-minute warning, what are they going to do? They're going to freak because they didn't get to say goodbye to the slide, the swing, the sand. So it's the same thing. You need to give them the warning that the nap is coming. And if you do a routine in the same method, same order, and you help them learn how to be in touch with winding their body down,
That makes so much sense. Because that's what we do for like nighttime when you're ready to go to bed, right?
Yeah, I have to say that I think that's an awesome idea. I'm a big storyteller with Alex. I love the stories. And I never once ever thought about actually bringing that to nap time. I just never made that, that connection. But it's like, but the stories work.
They
work 100% of the time when you know, when you tell it to them. So that's
and engaging them with their bodies too to relax their muscles, right?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Oh, good. So what about parents laying down with their children during nap time? Because this is the situation that I find myself in, and it still does not work. So let me set the scene here. So my 4-year-old and 2-year-old share a bedroom. They have separate beds. They're in twin beds that can be bunk beds, but they're not bunk beds right now. They're too young. So, but they're both in, you know, the same room. And so usually what I'll do is I'll lie down with the 2-year-old because the 2-year-old will fuss if I'm not in bed with him. If I'm laying down with his brother, he will not lay down. So I can reason with the 4-year-old and say, you know, I'm going to lay down with your brother. When your brother falls asleep, I'll come over to you or something like that. It usually works. But what I'm finding now is 2-year-old will fall asleep pretty quickly, usually. But then the 4-year-old just fights me and fights me and fights me. And so I end up I get frustrated because if I'm going to be in there laying down with my kids, I would rather be napping, you know, not fighting with my child to sleep. I would rather catch some Z's. So do you find that it's helpful for parents to lay down with their child? And what's your advice on that, really?
So, and we're talking about like the 4-year-old, the 2-year-old.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
I just need help with my situation. I'm talking about
Sunny
me, Jen.
I get it. Okay, it's all about
Sunny therapy.
It's all about you. Yeah. So here's what I would say. It's that same thing I always say. If you fell asleep in your living room and you woke up in your bedroom, you'd be like, one too many mojitos. How'd I get here?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
As compared to if I fell asleep in the bedroom and the pillows on the floor, not so shocking. Right.
Right.
So the whole concept of learning how to self-regulate or self-soothe. However, I get it that nap time is not the same as nighttime,
yeah.
Right? So I like the idea of patience stretching.
versus... So here's what I would say. If you could take the nap, then I would say, yay for you, right? Mm-hmm. If you can, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I think I have no problem with co-sleeping. If you're doing it safely, I think it's a great thing. The concept is the ability to self-soothe, or the ability to be able to put yourself to sleep and not be dependent on that special little caressing touch, or, you know, that nice little spooning, and they can only fall asleep that way. That's the bummer, because when they go through a sleep cycle, they will awake and not necessarily go in and extend that nice nap to something closer to an hour and a half, right? So that's the detriment. The detriment is if they can't self-soothe and then be able to take a long enough nap. So if that's the case, and that's not working for you to take the nap with them, right, then I think Dr. Harvey Karp talks about patient stretching, where you start working on their ability to contain themselves for a little longer, a little longer, a little longer. And you can do that outside of nap time first.
Okay.
And then you can start doing, like, you start to do the whole little lay down with them, bedtime routine, everything. And then you go, oh, I forgot to turn off the light out there, right? You know, so then you say, you stay right here, I'll be right back, right? And then you go do that. And then the next one is, oh, mama needs to go to the bathroom, I'll be back, right? And you're gone a little longer. So I know it's a little tricky, it says a little deceptive, but sometimes it's better to be a little tricky than to have to do a head-on battle, right? Because is it really going to help them go to sleep if you're having this crazy raging battle between them? It's not. Mm-hmm. So I would be more mindful of, is it causing a problem? If it's causing a problem, then that means that you probably need to help them learn how to do that on their own. And it's better to patient stretch them on that than it is to just battle it out with them.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah. No, I think so. Okay. For sure. Well, Jen, thanks so much for joining us today. For more information on toddler naps, or if you want to learn more about our expert, you can visit our website at newmommymedia.com. This conversation continues for members of the Parent Savers Club in our bonus content. Jen will give us some tips for what to do when you need to skip a nap or nap on the go. For more information about the club, visit our website.
Hello, Parent Savers. This is Elisa DiLorenzo, co-founder of One Extraordinary Marriage, where we educate, entertain, encourage, and inspire you to have mind-blowing intimacy in your marriage. Today, we're going to talk about the benefits of cuddling with your spouse. Making time to cuddle with your spouse before and after sex can do wonders for your marriage. You know that your skin is the largest organ on your body, and because it is, you should be using it to the benefit of your marriage. When your skin is in contact with your spouse's skin through cuddling, you'll connect at a deeper level, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. It's time to enjoy cuddling with your spouse. Cuddling releases the hormone oxytocin, the feel-good hormone, which can lead to overall feelings of happiness. It also releases endorphins, which are the same hormones that are released during a good workout. Nonverbal communication makes up 93% of how you and your spouse interact with each other. By cuddling together, there's talk without the words. Making time to cuddle with your spouse will also help you sleep better. Recent studies have shown that cuddling may lower levels of cortisol, which is released in response to stress. Less cortisol in your body means better sleep for you. When it comes to foreplay, take the time to enjoy that skin-on-skin contact before moving forward. Allow yourself to physically be present in the moment as you bond, build trust, and companionship. Take back your bedroom. Remember what your bed is intended for. Leave the book, TV, phone, tablet, and other items out of your bedroom. Cuddling helps to focus in on the two of you and not all the other stuff. It's time for you to cuddle up in your marriage. Make sure to check out our best-selling book, 7 Days of Sex Challenge, at oneextraordinarymarriage.com/7days. Enter promo code PARENTSAVERS at checkout and save 20% off your entire order. Thanks for listening to the Sex Talk, and be sure to listen to Parent Savers for more great parenting tips in the future.
That wraps up our show for today. We appreciate you listening to Parent Savers. Don't forget to check out our sister show, Preggy Pals, for expecting parents, the Boob Group for Moms Who Breastfeed, and Twin Talks for Parents of Multiples. This is Parent Savers, empowering new parents.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating health care problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified health care provider.
New Mommy Media is expanding our lineup of shows for new and expecting parents. If you have an idea for a new series, or if you're a business or organization interested in joining our network of shows through a co-branded podcast, visit newmommymedia.com. Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.